And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, let's dial it up here on a Thursday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Happy holidays to everybody. Bills back on the practice field in the stadium today. And there's good news from over there. Emmanuel Sanders, our eyeballs are telling us over there, is back on the practice field. He was listed as a limited participant yesterday. We'll see what his status is after practice is over today. As they already know, they will be without Cole Beasley for Sunday's game against the Patriots. Patriots, meanwhile, running back Ramondre Stevenson looks like he's going to miss his second straight day due to illness at Patriots practice. So that's an interesting development there. And as we know, Damian Harris is still trying to return from the hamstring injury. And then Brandon Bolden, the other running back, came up with a knee injury. So that's going to bear some watching through the course of the week. Steve, as we know, the holidays get busy. We've got extra responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here in, you know, at One Bills Drive at about 11 a.m. And I look down at my feet. And I realize I've got
two different shoes on.
Two different shoes.
What are you doing?
This is where my life is at
this
point.
That's a new low, bro. You don't have matching shoes on.
I don't. Not at all. I mean, that's where I'm at here.
I thought I was old and senile. You're worse.
I am.
How many concussions have you had?
None.
Oh, my gosh.
I've headed a lot of soccer balls, so maybe I've had dozens of mini ones.
Explain that to me. What is happening in your house?
It's just a lot of stuff going on. People in, people out, and you know, I'm running around this morning because you know we taped the latest episode of Bills by the Numbers podcast this morning, so I had to get in a little earlier. And I'm running around, and I've got two sets of sneakers in my cubby.
Apparently, you
in
do.
In the mudroom,
right?
And I just kind of – I didn't even turn the light on in there. And it's a relatively dark room. There's no windows in that area of the house. So it's dimly lit, and I got a gray shoe and a black shoe. And I just pulled out two shoes and slapped them on. I guess I should feel more fortunate that I have a left on a left and a right on a right.
Yeah, that's a good point. You would have felt that, though.
Well, true. I would have. But, I just went on my merry way. It's not like I got in the car – and I'm getting out of the car, and I'm like, oh, geez, how did I do that?
Yeah, why is one shoe
I got all the way till about 11:30.
Like, yeah, but think about it, too. You would think, like, maybe one of them has a bigger heel lift or something. It's like, wow, that doesn't feel right.
Yeah, nothing of the sort. Now, in my defense, nobody here in the office noticed either.
You could
not
have
that
made
you
it
always
out.
Look at people's feet, right?
You could have made it out in and out of here with never having told us this. I applaud your forthright nature.
I'm honest.
I would never
even about my own flaws all too often. So, yeah, those are my state of affairs, and I guess it could be a lot worse than having two incorrect shoes on your feet.
Well, my state of affairs has nothing to do with yours. It's not on that par, but I did watch Emmett Otter, Jug Band Christmas.
Oh.
I got through half of that, and that was it.
And then you bailed.
It's garbage.
It's slow moving, right?
I am an enormous Jim Henson Muppet fan.
Yeah,
and that program
that ruined
is
it for you.
That is garbage.
Wow,
it moves slower.
It does move slow.
Oh my gosh,
it does move slow.
A
so
glacier.
You pulled the ripcord about halfway through.
Yes,
yeah.
I was Netflixing it, and it I pop out. How much more of this is there?
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, you know, I can't.
All right. Well, I give you credit for at least giving it an opportunity.
Yes.
I will admit.
Emmett Otter Jug Band Christmas is a no-go for me.
Yeah, I will admit that as a kid, I liked it more than as an adult. As an adult now, it kind of comes across as a little hokey.
Well, it is a little bit, you know, that storyline is done. I don't even know how the thing ends, and I'm really completely not interested.
Well, it's got a happy ending, of course.
What happens with the rock band? Are the bad guys
they all get in trouble.
Do their hearts change, or they just get out of the picture? Do they get what they deserve?
I'm trying to remember. I want to say that somebody performs an act of kindness to them, and then they're changed by it.
Right.
You know, spirit of Christmas,
exactly.
Giving instead of receiving, all
exactly.
of that. I want to say that's how it ends, but I'm going to be quite honest. I probably haven't watched it in about 12, 15 years, and I knew it was a slow mover.
Oh,
and
baby, slow moving is doing it, is paying it a compliment.
Well, I give you, I applaud you for trying in the spirit of Christmas. The one thing we do agree on, though, is a year without a Santa Claus is probably the best Rankin and Bass Christmas special. That is the showstopper of all of the Christmas specials from the animated claymation genre.
Yeah, what is it? What
A Year Without a Santa Claus.
Right, and it was who does it? The Hannah
Rankin and Bass.
Rankin and Bass, that's right.
Yeah.
Great one.
With the Heat Miser and the Snow Miser.
That is an all-time classic.
That is,
I agree.
That is a must.
And there are
another,
I'm not saying that's the only one. I mean, Dr. Seuss, you don't like the Grinch.
I'm
like
not
the,
a Grinch
I like
fan,
the Grinch.
Yeah.
I like the live action Grinch with Jim Carrey too.
Yep, yep.
I like
Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
And
with
I told
Fred
you,
Astaire is a good one.
Right, the great White Christmas. Bing Crosby. You ever seen the old one, White Christmas?
I have not. I don't think I've seen the old one.
It's pretty fantastic.
Is it?
Another one. It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart.
Right.
All-time great.
Yeah.
All-time
it's
great.
It's got a great ending, but, man, it gets really dark in some places there.
It does.
For a Christmas movie.
But only for a minute because it's
a minute?
Just, yeah, because he goes back. Yeah, well, whatever. It's awesome. And then, like I told you the other day, the Muppet Christmas Carol with Michael Caine as Scrooge, untouchable.
Yeah.
It's one of the all-time
It's a Wonderful Life is another one I think you could categorize as a slow mover. That one takes time to
takes a little
develop.
Time. Takes a little time. I think, yeah.
So you got to be patient through that one as well. Yeah. So I applaud you for giving it at least an opportunity. I don't blame you for
but
not
it's garbage,
finishing
man, I'm
it.
Telling you.
We had a caller on yesterday who said, hey, I put that on with my kids. After about 5 minutes, they looked
correct.
At me and said, we got to commit this guy. Dad's got to get committed. This
You're
is terrible.
Crazy, Dad. He was correct.
Yeah.
He's correct. It was
made back in 1978 when I think we were
77.
I think we can all argue, you know, it was a time when everybody had a lot more patience. Got to have a lot of patience for that one. We got a jam-packed show for you today, though. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, we've got ESPN NFL insider and fantasy football expert Field Yates giving us his ultimate fantasy lineup for Week 16. Some interesting choices in the lineup this week. We'll get to those at the bottom of the hour. Then, in the second hour of the program, the Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas shows up for his weekly visit with us, and he will be talking Bills-Patriots rematch. And then, after practice is over, we look forward to having one Dane Jackson join us, whose second meeting with the Patriots, as far as his defensive responsibilities go, are going to be in stark contrast to what he had to do in the first matchup when it was a veritable windstorm in Highmark Stadium, and throwing the football wasn't even on the radar of the Patriots in that game. So we've got all of that coming your way. We may even get some interview Q&A from Stephon Diggs, Micah Hyde, and or Tremaine Edmonds, depending on how quickly practice ends. It's also the time of the week here where we will be getting your comments and thoughts on this monumental game. I mean, this is a monumental game. There's no question about it. The magnitude, the importance, it's basically for the division. And, you know, I think a lot of people are trying to be calm on the way in. But I think once we get to about 10-1 on Sunday, that's when the nail biting is going to ensue. Because I think everybody knows the Patriots team and Bill Belichick enough to understand
they're hard to beat.
This is not going to be an easy game. And so that's why we're asking you today, has there been a regular season game that lived up to the importance of this Sunday's game against the Patriots? There haven't been many over the years. And this one's pretty big. It's gigantic.
We talked about this earlier that in my day, way back in the day, it used to be instead of the Patriots and whoever, Bills or Dolphins, whoever it is, it was the Bills-Dolphins.
Right.
In the East, and Marino or Jim and their crews would get together late in the season on the second time, and it was for the division title almost invariably. And I remember we had when we beat them 44-34 here in with snow on the field at one point, and then they cleaned the field off. It was one of those games where You knew it coming in. Winner of the game takes the division. That's all there is to it. And, you know, we beat them that day. There was a play, you know, playoff games were a different animal, of course, but there have been other regular season games that were enormous. You know, 3 years, 4 years ago in 17, where they had to win in Miami and then get some help.
That was a big one.
I thought, and for me, and I was, you know, part of the old time moments with, you know, the 51-3 games, the comeback game, and all that other stuff.
But we're looking for regular season games.
That regular season game at the end of 2017 when they broke the drought and they needed to get help. Mm-hmm. That was one of the best moments in franchise history. Maybe the best.
It was.
Maybe the best moment in franchise history. You had new ownership that was getting their legs underneath them. You had a brand new coach and a staff who were accused of tanking early in the season when they traded the, you know, when they traded those guys.
Sammy Watkins, Ronald Darby.
Right. They traded those guys, brought guys in. They thought, oh, they're tanking. And they may take that roster and get into the playoffs at the end of that season. I still think that may be the most iconic moment in franchise history so far. Mm. Just because of the way it happened and the technology available, because we all got to experience it with the players in the locker room all together. And you have videos from fans everywhere across the country and across the globe who were all there watching it together. That we all knew what we had to do. We all knew what had to happen. And for everybody to see it together was – it was, you can't duplicate it. You couldn't have planned it.
Right. And the crazy thing about it was we're all in the bowels of the stadium in Miami waiting to get into the locker room after the Bills beat the Dolphins. Nothing had been decided yet because the Cincinnati-Baltimore game was still going when the Bills game had already finished. Bills players in the locker room, they've got the TV on. The locker room is not open to the media yet. We're all outside, and we're trying to find out what's going on the game on our phones, and then we hear on the other side of the door the locker room erupting. And we're just on the other side of the door in the bowels of the stadium there in Miami waiting to get in to talk to everybody. And by then, you know, if you didn't have it on your phone, you knew.
Yeah.
Something good happened that Cincinnati did that was going to help Buffalo get in the playoffs.
It was a massive game that got in. And I think the way that people experienced it made it all the more special. And I thought it was perfect. So I still think, you know, you talk about massive games. It was a game you had to win to get in and then get some help. I get that. But what it meant, you know, turned out to be a win and in. And it was, yeah, it's huge. So there are games like that that come along, but it's hard to remember. I don't know about were you.
Well, I would
this
say
this one coming up is really big.
Yeah, I mean, there was a game in 2019, if you remember, where the division was still in play against the Patriots, Week 16, same week as this week, and the Bills had to win to catch up to the Patriots in the division. In the 2019 season, and they ended up losing 24-17. Rex Burkhead gave the Patriots the game-winning score with 5 minutes left in the game on a one-yard touchdown run. They were down 17-16, and then the Patriots scored with 5 minutes remaining to go up 24-17, and the Bills couldn't muster anything the rest of the way there and end up losing that game, and that basically put the division out of reach for Buffalo. That's the last time they were this close to winning the division, aside from last year, obviously, when they ran away with it with a 13-3 mark. But even then, that was still during the Brady era, and I think the feeling was different. You know, we had yet to experience the euphoria of the 2020 season. This was a team still climbing and trying to prove they could be a playoff team and a contender. They had just come off the big Sunday night win over the Steelers, which essentially put them in a position to be in the playoffs. And then the division was still sitting there for them, and they come up short again to New England. I still don't feel like the magnitude of that game matches this one, but it's the closest thing in recent history that we can get to it, short of the game that you referenced at the end of 2017.
Right, and there it could be, you can envision this one if this came at week 18 instead of week 16, where neither team has a chance to recover, or neither team has, still has opportunities to get in. You'd have to get to imagine a scenario where the team, either it was the Dolphins or the Jets or whoever, or the Patriots that you're playing against in week 18, you got to win it and you got to get in. Yeah. You win it and you're in. If you lose it, you're out. And no chance for anything else to happen. That's not the case here. So that's the only case you could conjure up where it could be. If you transversed the Bills-Jet game at the end of the season to this weekend and the Patriots-Dolphins game to this weekend and put the Bills-Patriots at week 18,
oh,
then you would know. That would be.
But let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Number to get on board. Let us know if there was another regular season game that you think matches the magnitude and maybe some of the angst you might have for the game this coming Sunday, which essentially is going to tie for the division. We go to the phones, and we will lead off with Kevin in Hamburg. Kevin, what do you have for us here on One Bills Live?
Thanks for taking my call, and have a wonderful holiday.
You too.
First, I want to say my Christmas movie of all time I like was Fred Claus, because it changed Kevin Spacey from a jerk to a nice guy at the end, and Vince Vaughn from a jerk to a nice guy at the end.
Fair enough. Okay, we'll take those. Duly noted.
And also, about the question, I think I'm going to go back way back to your first year you went to the Super Bowls. Christmas weekend, 1990, Frank Reich had to replace Jim Kelly because he was gimpy against the Dolphins here, and a lot of people didn't think he could do it against, and we won like 24-13. He played an awesome game, but a lot of people didn't think he could do it against the mighty Marino, even though it was up here in Buffalo and all that. And I think that one, if you had to compare in a way, even though back then it was Miami and New England was pretty hopeless and hapless and pathetic, I think that the importance of how it was, you know, because he, Jim couldn't play. He was gimpy or whatever was wrong under the weather, and
yeah,
he pulled it out. A lot of people think, oh, I don't know.
I have forgotten about that. I know you're probably right about that.
Do you remember that game?
I do not remember that game. I do not remember that game. I know that was just one of all those Miami games that we played that were always so critical, particularly late in the year, like at Christmas time, like Kevin said. It seemed to be every single year because, like he said, the Patriots were not the Patriots we know and hate today. And the Jets, however, were still the Jets. So they weren't in the picture. So it was the Miami Dolphins, the Buffalo Bills, and Marino and Kelly. And then, the game you're talking about with Frank, I do not remember.
Kevin is pretty accurate with everything here because I'm looking it up, and the Bills and Dolphins, December 23rd. So it's today, back in 1990. What is that, 31 years?
Oof.
31 years ago today, Bills, Dolphins in then Rich Stadium, 1 o'clock kickoff, and the Bills win the game 24-14. You're off by 1 point on the score there, Kevin.
24-14 is what it says.
And Frank Reich was the starting quarterback. And Frank, let's see, 15-21 for 234 yards, 2 touchdowns, 139.8 rating. Thurman rumbled for 154 and a touch. He basically had 180 total yards from scrimmage.
Thurman was pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I think he was pretty good. So James Lofton led the scoring with a 7-yard touchdown pass. Andre Reed followed with an 11-yarder. Mark Duper for the Dolphins made it 14-7. Norwood hit a field goal, and then Thurman had a rushing touchdown. Mark Clayton with a late touchdown to make it 24-14. Bills improved to 13-2. Dolphins dropped to 11-4. So prior to the game, the Dolphins were only a game back of the Bills for the division lead, and Buffalo holds them off, goes 13-2, goes on to win the division, and obviously goes to their first Super Bowl. So, yeah, good pick, Kevin. That's a good pick there.
That's a good one, yeah.
Right around the same time of year, too.
Right, and it was, you knew it would be kind of late in the year, but, and that, you know, reinforces the kind of remembrance that I have about the atmosphere every year in the division. It was the Bills and the Dolphins. There weren't very many years where the Dolphins beat us, but there were a couple.
Yeah. The Bills were favored in that game by just 3.5, to give you an idea on you know, what the odds makers thought of the two teams at the time. They were both very successful teams. 39 degrees, relative humidity 95%, wind just 12 miles per hour. Not a bad day for December 23rd. We go back to the phones. We go to Rob in North Tonawanda. What do you have for us, Rob? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. Hey, guys. I wanted to bring up the, I think it was 02, week 17, we played the Steelers backups.
2004.
And they just destroyed us. That was 2004?
2004, yeah.
That's right. And what was that running back's name, Willie something?
Willie Parker.
Willie Parker, that's right. I was trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, yeah, we were one game away from the playoffs and thought we had it locked up playing the backups, but they just, they killed us.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers had already assured themselves of their playoff situation going into that game. So then head coach Bill Cowher decided he was going to play most of his backups in that game since they didn't need the victory. And so, you know, players like Willie Parker are starting, a backup running back to Jerome Bettis, among others. And the Bills had won six in a row down the stretch. I think after they started the season 1-4 and, you know, brought it all the way back, put themselves back into contention. They were 9-6 after 15 games played.
Oh, four.
Now, it was a win, and then they needed a little help to get in. I believe they needed either the Jets or the Cincinnati to lose. Somebody had to lose. They had to win to get in. And I believe, if I remember correctly, they got the help that they would have needed to get in. The problem was Bledsoe and the Bills stumbled mightily, lost 29-24, and it probably wasn't that close, as it was 29-17 late in that game. The clincher was the James Harrison 18-yard fumble return for a touchdown to turn a two-point lead for the Steelers into a nine-point advantage, 26-17. And the Bills never recovered. Turnovers did them in that game. And that was a crusher. I was there for that. I remember covering that six-game winning streak. The team was on fire. The city was alive again, like we hadn't seen in some time.
Right.
The anticipation was huge. The expectations were even larger because everybody knew the Steelers were playing their backups. Ah, we don't have to play Jerome Bettis. You know, we don't have to play against Hines Ward. You know, we don't have to face any of these guys. They're going to be all sitting on the bench. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Willie Parker had a long run in that game, not for a touchdown. I just remember him running a long way. I want to look up the stats. But Tommy Maddox started at quarterback, had two picks, and still won the game. Unbelievable. That was one of the all-time letdowns, I would say, in Bills history. You win six in a row to get right on the precipice of returning to the playoffs for the first time in 5 years, and you put up a stinker.
Yep.
In front of your home.
That's
fans.
A squasher.
Oh.
That's a squasher.
It was rough. I got to tell you, that was a rough one in that game. That one sticks with me.
That one sticks with a lot of people. That one I remember, too, the overtime loss that they got from the Steelers game. And I get them confused sometimes. The Steelers game with Stevie Johnson, who dropped the overtime pass. Yeah, that was a rough one.
That was a tough one to take, too, because they had that team beat. And that was a good football team, and they were playing all their starters in that one. So, yes absolutely. That was tough, to say the least. Willie Parker, 19 carries, 102 yards. He ripped off a 58-yard run at one point. That was the one I remembered.
Yeah.
I knew he had a long run in that game. And that was the Drew Bledsoe, Willis McGahee, Lee Evans, you know, offense. Moulds was still playing. It was a good group, and they had kind of caught fire. And the anticipation for that game, I would say it was pretty close to what we're experiencing this for Patriots Week here in Week 16. I would put it on a par with that. I would. So that's a good – first two callers hitting it out of the park today. Kevin with that 1990 Bills-Dolphins game with the division on the line. And then that game, 2004, Week 17, chance to get in with a little bit of help playing the Steelers backups, and they come up short, lose 29-24. Double UGG there. We will take a break here ourselves, but when we come back, it is time to be joined by ESPN football insider, NFL insider, and fantasy football expert, Field Yates. He's got his ultimate fantasy lineup presented by FanDuel. It's coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And it is that time of the week where we check in with ESPN NFL insider and fantasy football analyst Field Yates with his ultimate fantasy lineup presented by FanDuel. Make every moment more. And Field, we're in playoff mode now for fantasy leagues. We really can't make many mistakes here because this is a one and done situation now.
Well, hopefully you're not implying that we normally do make mistakes.
Oh, no, no.
But, okay, good. But you are correct. The margin for error has been dramatically reduced, but that's part of the allure of daily fantasy on FanDuel as well, is that, like, if you lost last week in your playoffs, you've got new life. And if your lineup doesn't hit, which it will if you follow this lineup, but if you set a different lineup and it doesn't hit, you come back in week 17 and you've got some more. But I will start here. I'll just say that this is a weird week in daily fantasy. On FanDuel, season-long fantasy, because of all these players that have been placed on the reserve COVID-19 list, guys. It's like every time I open up Twitter, another player that is well-known has been placed on the COVID-19 list. We hope that changes, and that's not going to be the case. But, gentlemen, I think with 3 weeks left to go in the regular season, in many ways that will be one of the themes, is who is available and who is not.
And there's no way to know. I mean, what is the latest possible normal day in the playoff when you set these lineups?
Yeah, well, the good news is FanDuel allows you to swap out players. So you have the ability to swap all the way until Monday night. Now, obviously, the options grow limited as we get later on in the week, and you still got to be able to fit it in price-wise. But let's just say you had a player in your lineup for 1 p.m., and you find out on Sunday morning that player is unavailable due to injury, COVID, or otherwise. You could swap that player out for somebody that has equal or lesser salary. And in that circumstance, you could replace him in your lineup. So it's an unusual time right now in so many ways. Every game, literally every game, has some player that is on the fence to be available this Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. So this is the world we live in, guys, unfortunately. But we hope that all these players and everybody else involved in the football community stays safe. And as best we can avoid as much of these COVID-19 cases as possible.
All right. So with that, let's kick off the lineup at the quarterback spot like we usually do. And it looks like you're trying to take advantage of a weak defense here.
That's right. I'm going with Justin Herbert. And this is a little bit of a curveball. As you guys may recall, normally I try to pay down on my quarterback spot in FanDuel lineups because you can find good value on the board with players with favorable matchups. But one of the issues this week is that so many of the top quarterbacks have their own question marks. Lamar Jackson may or may not play. You've got Patrick Mahomes, who may not have Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. You have Tom Brady, who may not have Mike Evans, who won't have Chris Godwin. He won't have Leonard Fournette. Panthers defense, not otherworldly, but pretty solid. You guys saw it up close and personal last week. So there's an opportunity here, I think, to take advantage of a really sweet spot for Justin Herbert, as I suspect the Chargers will take care of business on Sunday against Houston, even likely without Austin Eckler. But Herbert at $8,400 where I start my lineup.
Yeah, and then to the run, that makes perfect sense because of the uncertainty surrounding the other guys. And you move to the running back spot, you got two guys. One of them is an old name we know. The other one, not so much.
Yeah. That's right. The first one is Ezekiel Elliott, priced at $7,000 for the Cowboys. And he's been okay this year. Not great, but okay. They play Washington, though, on Sunday. And Washington is going to be coming off of a short week in which they got their butts handed to them against the Philadelphia Eagles. By the way, they're traveling in both of these instances. So they got to travel back. I know it's a train trip from Philly on Tuesday night, but still, you're getting back late. You're turning around and flying out on Saturday to play the Cowboys on Sunday. I think Zeke's in a pretty good spot there, even as he's been banged up a little bit. But my second running back is really the interesting one, and that's Ronald Jones, who will take over for Leonard Fournette this weekend. and he's priced at $5,400. On FanDuel, that's one of the lower priced starting running backs you'll find on the board. Ronald Jones was a second round pick out of USC 3.5 years ago. Is he a star? No. Does he have some really unique traits? He does. And the Bucs need to hand him the ball a bunch because, as we just talked about, they're not going to have Chris Godwin. They're not going to – well, they may not have Mike Evans. We'll see on some of those guys. So I think this is an opportunity for Ronald Jones to have maybe 15 or 18 or 20 total touches.
And then wide receivers, you're going with some heavy hitters here. We know you always spend big in this area, but you're going with probably the most dominant receiver in the league leading you off here.
That's right. And FanDuel, I use this algorithm often, but what you're looking to do is return a player at 3 times the amount he costs. $9,800 for Cooper Kupp is as expensive as you'll find, I believe, other than Jonathan Taylor this weekend on FanDuel. Second highest priced player on the board and still worth it. I mean, guys, it's just a remarkable season. I don't really have many more words for it. Every time we turn, Cooper Kupp is doing something ridiculous, but it's a fantastic matchup as well. Vikings have been the 31st best defense against opposing wide receivers this year. Great matchup for Cooper Kupp. He's been so good. Moving from him to Keenan Allen, who's priced at $7,700. He, for the Chargers, obviously a very talented player. And the matchup, as we were just alluding to, is really good against Houston, who plays scrappy and tough, but they just don't have the manpower this year to be the kind of team that threatens most Sundays. So Keenan Allen against Houston, I like. And then one more, and I got to keep the injury monitor going here, is Antonio Brown could return for the Buccaneers. He's priced at $7,000. Now, the upshot would be this. If Antonio Brown plays on Sunday, if he's healthy enough to go, he's got A, fresh legs, B, he might be the number one wide receiver for Tampa Bay. As Mike Evans, we'll see whether he plays or not. Chris Godwin, unavailable. This Bucs team's going to need somebody to step up, and I think Antonio Brown could be the one that is called upon to be Tom Brady's trusted target, which, as we know, Tom Brady loves AB. He loves him as a player, loves him as a teammate. He should be busy on Sunday.
Yeah, it almost gets the feeling that Tom Brady wants to make a point about Antonio Brown. I mean, he's Brady's the reason Antonio Brown is there, and when he's on the field, Brady looks for him. There's no question about it. So I think, and particularly in this situation, it has all the makings for the human relationship of those two to take over and have Brady feed him the football.
It's a great point, Steve. He wants to validate this because there are a lot of people right now that are saying, hold on, didn't Bruce Arians say very clearly that if Antonio Brown screws up once, he's gone? Well, I don't know about you guys, but I tend to think that providing a fake vaccine card, which is not just like immoral, but also illegal, would be a pretty big screw up, in my opinion, especially in a league that is trying its best to mitigate the spread of this virus as much as it can. So Antonio Brown is still with the Bucs. Tom Brady certainly wants to make that effort and that investment look sharp and good. And I think that's part of the reason why he should be busy on Sunday.
All right. So tight end and flex. We have a Bill sighting, everybody.
That's right. That's right. Yes, we do. So I'll get to the flex in just a moment. Tight end is Dallas Goedert, who was really good on Monday night. Even if he had two big drops, he was awesome. He had a career high in terms of receiving yards. You get a little bit of a discount here. I said Monday night. I meant Tuesday night. A little bit of a discount here. Prices were set on Monday. He played on Tuesday. Really good player. Decent matchup. And then the flex, Gabriel Davis, who, as you guys both know, back-to-back-to-back games with touchdowns. They play the Patriots on Sunday, which we know is an excellent defense. You know, two really, really good pass defenses. So may not necessarily be the game in which you're tapping into a lot of fantasy players. But Gabriel Davis has been good, and he's especially effective in the red zone. He has been one of the most targeted players in the league, both in the red zone and also the end zone over the past 3 weeks. It's part of what happens when you're 6'3 or 6'4, however tall he specifically is. He's obviously a big-bodied wide receiver. Josh Allen's got a lot of trust in him. We know Cole Beasley be unavailable. It sounds like Emmanuel Sanders has a chance to play on Sunday, but if he does not, then Gabe Davis is the number two wideout for the Buffalo Bills against the Patriots.
And, of course, then you go with the all-important defense, and it's the Detroit Lions making a stop on your fantasy team. I love it.
Yeah, why not, right? First of all, they did play really well last weekend. Who would have thought to have them in their daily fantasy lineup against the Arizona Cardinals? If I had, I would have made even more money. But this is a defense that plays, I'd say they punch above their weight class, so to speak, right? Talent-wise, no one's going to confuse the Lions, one of the best in the NFL. But they are certainly competitive. They're certainly feisty. They're ascending. They do a pretty good job of forcing turnovers in the back end. And the matchup against Atlanta is an offense that, I don't know, I don't really know that they scare you, right? I mean, Kyle Pitts was named to the Pro Bowl, and I'm not really big, Pro Bowl snub slash a guy didn't deserve to go to the Pro Bowl player. But still, I think part of that is the NFC is like not a super deep conference in terms of tight ends. He has one touchdown this season. They have not found a way to totally maximize Kyle Pitts' skill set. Number one wide receiver is Russell Gage. Really their best offensive player right now is Cordarrelle Patterson. So I think this could be a matchup that the Lions hold Atlanta to 20 or fewer points potentially.
And then we had a lot of members of the Bills Mafia, as you might imagine, that were not exactly thrilled with Pro Bowl selections last night, particularly yeah. Josh Allen not getting a Pro Bowl nod. I believe you were tweeting something out in support of Josh Allen's candidacy for the Pro Bowl recently. I don't mind Justin Herbert. He's got one more touchdown pass than Josh Allen. I think Lamar Jackson is the pick that maybe rubbed some people the wrong way, not only because he missed some games, but he's turned the ball over more than usual. So I don't know. Where do you kind of come down on that at the quarterback position for the AFC?
Yeah, there's no question that he should have been there, in my opinion. Josh Allen should have been one of the three quarterbacks. I think he should have been the number two quarterback picked in the AFC this year, or one of the top two, he and Justin Herbert. And that's not the slight Patrick Mahomes or not the slight Lamar Jackson entirely. I felt like what happened with Lamar Jackson's candidacy is his best stretch of like four or five games was perhaps the best of any quarterback in the AFC. He was kind of carrying that team for a while. Josh has been more consistent, I think, over the course of the year. Josh obviously hasn't missed any time like Lamar has, who's basically missed two full games already and potentially a third on Sunday. And then Patrick Mahomes, again, he's Patrick Mahomes and he deserves all the credit and all the respect that he gets. He also had a six-game stretch where he had three different games of zero touchdown passes. Like Josh's consistency week over week, I think, speaks for itself. The running factored in as well gives him, to me, he should have been a Pro Bowl pick. You know, I always tell people, though, is that I think snubs probably matter more to the fans and the media than they do the players. That's okay. Because I really believe, like, my takeaway last night thought was we need to have four quarterback spots in the Pro Bowl roster going forward because Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, not just great quarterbacks, but great young quarterbacks. And there are a couple others in the AFC that are really good players too. They're going to feel like every year you're getting snubbed, right? Joe Burrow's an excellent young yep. quarterback as well. We'll see what the future looks like for Deshaun Watson. Trevor Lawrence is a good young quarterback or potentially a very good young quarterback. But I thought Josh deserved to hear his name called last night.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a tough spot, obviously, for the reasons you mentioned. Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Pat Mahomes, Justin Herbert. Then you've got
Burrow.
Joe Burrow. Trevor Lawrence is going to be there for a while. Deshaun Watson, if he ever comes back into the league. There's some guys. And it's going to be a really, really crowded room for a long time because they're all, 25 and under.
Give or take.
That's right. Yeah. By the way, look at that graphic. Like, I'm sure I know that, again, these things tend to matter more than player to play to the media and fans and the players. But, you know, I can't get on board with the scenario in which Micah Hyde is only the fourth alternate amongst safeties. Right. I mean, talk about well-rounded, do everything correct, consistency, reliable playmaking. You know, he's one of the best in football. He's a fourth alternate for a Pro Bowl. That to me is probably equally unsavory as Josh's first alternate status.
Yeah, Jordan
Hard
Poyer.
For me to figure that one out.
Jordan Poyer too. I mean, his numbers this year
Jordan
are better
as well.
Than,
yeah,
they're better than Tyrann Mathieu's numbers in Kansas City. And I know Matthew's got a bigger body of work and he's been to the Pro Bowl before, but Poyer's numbers this year were better than his, and he's a third alternate.
It's crazy, guys. Yeah, no, they have legit gripes, but you know, Pro Bowl come back every other year, and hopefully those guys get some love on the All-Pro balloting this year because that's the list that I think carries even more merit than the Pro Bowl.
Want to ask him about Bills Patriots, Steve? Before we
what do you
go?
Think about the matchup in Foxborough?
Monumental matchup.
1 o'clock in the afternoon, Patriots hosting the Bills.
Can't wait for this one, guys. Really looking forward to it, obviously. Let me start with the thing that we don't know, and that's COVID absences, whether those will persist into Sunday. I believe the Bills are at 7 right now on the COVID-19
list. They just
got
Tyrell Dotson back, a backup linebacker, but I think Beasley's not going to play. We know that. And then we have to wait on the linemen.
We'll see on Deion Dawkins and John Feliciano as well. Patriots have a few COVID absences themselves as well, most notably their wide receiver Kendrick Bourne. Nelson Aguilar hasn't practiced yet this week. He's in the concussion protocol. So both these teams could have some notable absences come Sunday. You know, I think this is probably a good opportunity for the Bills. This is sort of a physicality check, not a gut check, but we know what the theme of the last time they played. I know it's going to be defined by 3 passes, but you know, the reason why the Patriots only threw the ball 3 times because they established a lead early in the running game. And I'd imagine the Patriots aren't going to throw the ball just 3 times, but I also imagine they expect to be very busy on the ground again come Sunday with Damian Harris likely as their lead back. So I think this is an opportunity for the Bills and Patriots to both sort of settle the score in terms of physicality. Can the Bills go toe-to-toe with the Patriots in that spot? If so, then, you know, this is a toss-up type of game. But I can't wait for it. I think both these teams are outstanding, by the way. I'm not going to let Sunday dictate how I feel about their long-term outlook. I know the Bills' margin for error is a little bit less because of their record right now, but you know, I think this Bills team is really good. I think this Patriots team is really, really good as well. So I can't wait to watch them on Sunday.
All right, Field, as always, thanks for the time. Thanks, enjoy Field. Christmas with your family. We'll catch up with you next week right before the new year.
Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas, guys, and talk to you guys next week. Looking forward to it already.
All right. That's Field Yates, ESPN NFL insider and fantasy football expert with his ultimate fantasy lineup. Presented by FanDuel, make every moment more. We are going to take a break here, but when we come back, more of your phone calls. We want to know, is there a regular season game that you remember that had the magnitude and lived up to the importance of the Bills game this Sunday, which is essentially going to decide the division title at 1 p.m. in Foxborough? It's One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Mafia, you could win a trip to the Super Bowl on us. Just download the official mobile app of the Buffalo Bills, create a profile, and fill out the entry form. Already have a profile? Just fill out the form in your app. One lucky fan will win 2 tickets to the Super Bowl in L.A., including flights and hotel. Don't miss out on this once-in-a-lifetime experience. We do want to get back to the phones as we are trying to find regular season games that you remember that lived up to the importance of this Sunday's game for the Bills against the Patriots, which will essentially decide the AFC East title. For those that don't know already, New England can clinch a playoff berth with a win coupled with multiple teams losing. Various combinations exist there. I'm not going to run through all of them.
If they win and Miami loses, they're in.
The more important thing is if New England wins and Miami loses, New England clinches the division. Overdone, thanks for coming. That's probably the simplest way to explain their situation this weekend. There is not a win and clinch scenario for the Bills. Right. We go back to the phones, though, and we go to Bob in New Jersey. Bob, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I'm a longtime Bills fan. I started rooting for the Bills, unfortunately, after this game.
Okay.
I'm going back to the 1964 season when the Bills played the Patriots in Fenway Park. Last game of the regular season, the winner won the AFL Eastern Division. And the Bills won that game 24-14 and went on to win the AFL Championship.
Okay.
Had they lost that game, the Patriots would have been the division champion.
Yes. Okay. So, yes, they were locked up there. Yeah. And they went on and won the championship in a resounding fashion.
I saw, a touchdown, a 102-yard kick return in that game, I believe, from the Bills.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And 102 yards is the longest one for, maybe still is, longest.
What I want to know and what I wonder about, was that the year – because we've heard some of the old Bills over the years. I remember when I was doing a series on BuffaloBills.com in 2009 for the 50th anniversary season. You know, we got a lot of AFL championship team Bills on the horn. I can't remember who it was. But they described a game between the Bills and the Patriots, the Boston Patriots then, where the Bills had to go up there to play them. And I want to say they said it was this game that Bob in New Jersey was describing for the division title in 64. And at the beginning of the game, Cookie Gilchrist got a handoff and trucked their most physical player on the roster on defense. Like, put him up flat on his back.
I heard this story.
And Cookie got up after he flattened him and stood up and said, "Who's next? I'm going to be here all day." And basically ran over him the rest of the game.
I heard that story. I heard Cookie set the tone.
Yeah, that's a tone setter right there. No doubt about it. Let's go back to the phones, though. And Rick in Jamestown is waiting for us. Rick, what do you have?
Well, this was a playoff game in 1980. 1980 was a great season. We had beat the Steelers, ended the Dolphins streak at like 22 in a row we lost to. And we had to go to San Diego, and he had to play the Chargers. And Joe Ferguson sprained his ankle, and they had to put in Gary Marangi. And we ended up losing the playoff game after all the bad seasons in the 70s. That sticks in my mind.
So what was your level of anticipation for that game, though, Rick? Can you take us through what you were feeling going into that week?
Well, we hadn't been in the playoffs in years, and we were all excited about Buffalo being in the playoffs. I'll tell you, guys, I used to go to a lot of the games back in the 70s when the Bills were one-win, two-win seasons. And finally we got a season that we won the division. And we had a playoff game. We all got excited just to have poor Fergie sprain his ankle.
Yeah.
And we end up losing the game, and it was like, a bitter defeat.
Yeah, I get it. That's a good one, Rick. We appreciate
that. Yeah, I heard back in the day that
Those are the talking proud days.
I think he had sprained his ankle before, and it got so bad he had to quit playing. I think he got him to the playoffs and couldn't play.
Re-aggravated it in the game.
Yeah, and I remember, too, that Eddie Abramowski said, we made him sign a waiver.
To play?
To play.
Oh, wow.
Because his ankle was that bad. And
they tried to gut it out but couldn't.
Well, they gave him a needle and helped him, but, they're like going, you shouldn't play.
Yeah.
And back in the day, back then, and it's a little bit.
Well, if you think about it,
I don't care, I'm going
to
play.
Yeah, if you think about Joe's career to that point, limited playoff appearances. Yeah, you finally get there after winning the division. It's like, nothing's keeping me out of this game. And that was probably his approach. 803-0550 to jump on board. We're going to go to Dave in Florida next. Dave, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
How you doing today, guys?
Good.
Good.
All right. I believe it was 1965. The Buffalo Bills lost to Kansas City in the championship game in the AFL. To go to the first Super Bowl, which they called the NFL. And that one just broke my heart because we won the year before we won the AFL championship. And I don't know how many people remember that.
Yeah, to go to the first Super Bowl. That's what you're talking about, right?
That broke my heart.
Yeah.
And my Christmas story, did you see that? I went with Ralphie.
Ralphie. Yeah, that's a good one. We haven't mentioned that.
I love it.
Yeah, that's a keeper.
All right, guys.
Yeah, take it easy.
That one still hurts me, that game.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice, Dave. Thanks very much, Dave, for the call. Yeah, we're looking for some regular season games primarily. Some playoff games have come up of late, which I totally get because your expectations are through the roof when your team reaches the postseason, as we witnessed here last year. People were super excited about this team after they sprinted to a 13-3 finish and we're literally lumping up teams the last 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, they were on a roll. And you think about last year, the game in which they had to win to clinch the division was the Denver game out there. And it was like, what was 46 points?
45-19, I think the final was.
Just crushed that team. They were, and Josh is throwing it all over the yard.
Throwing darts.
Oh, my gosh. And
Jerry Hughes had a fumble return for a touchdown, weaving through traffic
for 20
yards.
I was doing that game on
the
radio. I remember that.
He's going to make it!
He's going to make it!
I'm such a goober. That might be your all-time Gus Johnson-like call.
I couldn't.
That's right up there, isn't it? It's got to be.
Because it was like even Murph was like, he's gonna run around again, and then he made that move and went back to the outside. It happened in a heart. It went from being this like
that
one of those defensive players that doesn't know what to do with the ball to he's gonna make it.
Jerry was a running back in high school.
Listen, they all were.
Those instincts came back.
All these guys were ball carriers when they were in high school. Even the big ones.
Let's squeeze Jim in Lockport in before we go to break here. Jim, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, good morning, guys. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Yeah, to you too.
I got a real quick funny story you'll get a kick out of, and then I have a question about officiating.
Okay.
The only way I could watch the Bills on Thanksgiving was to watch Americana football, because I didn't have a dish cut our local channels out.
Oh, boy.
So I'm watching the game, and of course it's in Spanish, right? So Josh Allen and Matt Breida touchdown. The announcer's going, Josh Allen to Matty Breida, touchy down.
All right.
I just thought it was so funny with the accent.
I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Very nice.
And I'll tell you right now, the guys that do the broadcasts in Spanish are, you want to talk about excitement level.
Yeah.
Those guys get pumped.
They do not hold back.
No, it's all out there, and they can be very entertaining. And sometimes I will flip over to those. Sometimes I'll watch soccer games on the Spanish channel because that's the only place it's available, much like the situation that he was in. And I took Spanish in high school and a semester in college. You don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah.
And so I'll be listening and I'm getting bits and pieces, you know. I've kind of learned from listening to enough soccer games that saque la meta is a goal kick. Right. You know what I mean? So you pick up the little stuff here and there. But, man, those guys talk fast, and it's hard to keep up when Spanish is your second language, not your first. We have to take a break here, though, because practice is over in the stadium, and we hope to be joined when we come back from break by a guy who will have a much different assignment with no wind, major wind in the forecast on Sunday in Foxborough. Dane Jackson set to join us next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are. Hour number two on a Thursday. Expect to be joined very soon by one Dane Jackson, as he will be our fresh off the field interview this week. And he's going to have an interesting assignment against the Patriots, as he will be defending the pass, presumably significantly more than he did in the first game,
right,
when Mac Jones threw three passes. Going to be a different kind of game, I think it's safe to say, certainly for the Bills' defense
one. It's interesting because, you know, the Patriots, kind of beat the Bills left-handed or with one arm tied behind their back, however you want to say it. I mean, they didn't throw the football at all. And 35, 40-mile-an-hour wins. Bills have no idea what to expect from their passing game. That was the first game that Dane Jackson got to start after Trey White got his knee hurt. This, as much as any game, has the Bills walking into it, I think, blind about what they can expect from the Patriots.
Yeah, because they didn't really unveil anything within the scope of their passing game. I do think if the Bills are able to get ahead of the Patriots early, they have an idea on what it might look like, because that's what the Patriots had to do the Colts last week.
Right.
They found themselves in a 20-0 hole and then had to put the game on Mac Jones' shoulders. So I think there is at least some evidence of what it might look like if the Bills can somehow, some way get up on them.
If they do, yeah. And even then it might not be until, midway through the fourth, and then, it is what it is. Yeah, I think the Bills are up against it, trying to get a handle on what they might see from the Patriots, and I think the Patriots, in that respect, hold all the cards. But if, you go out there like Josh Allen's been saying all week and they just execute, they should be okay.
Should be.
That's but
the operative term.
Getting that done against the Patriot defense is really difficult.
It is. And that's why even the odds makers have this as a tight game. They've got the Patriots as a 2.5-point home favorite. So we're talking less than the customary field goal,
right,
for an even game. So they think it's going to be even a little tighter than that. And obviously the COVID designations, who comes off the list, who stays on the list, come Sunday, figures to have an impact on this game as well. Bills still waiting on two offensive linemen in the form of John Feliciano and Deion Dawkins, who remain on COVID reserve. Tyrell Dotson, the backup linebacker, came off injured, off COVID reserve earlier today. He was the one who had gone on first last week. I want to say it was Tuesday of last week. So it took him a week, more than a week, to get back. 9 days.
Yeah.
And Deion Dawkins went on Thursday or Friday, I want to say, last week.
Friday morning.
So that one's going to be tight. If it took Tyrell Dotson 9 days, I think the fastest a player has come back is Ben Roethlisberger, who did it in 8 days. And he was vaxxed and boosted. It's going to be really tight to see if Deion Dawkins can get back. Feliciano will only be at a week even come game day Sunday.
Right.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to get one of those linemen back, let alone both of them, I think, based on how the timetables have worked. I realize every case is different, but in how long it's taken most guys to test out, it's usually upwards from a week. And if somebody can beat that, more power to them. And I realize it's easier for guys to get back who are asymptomatic, but I don't know. I think it's going to be a tough row to hoe to get back in time for the game, which could mean Spencer Brown for a second straight week might be playing left tackle.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be able to get it done. Yeah, they're going to go with that probably the same five they had last week.
Yeah. As long as Feliciano stays where he is on COVID reserve, and even if Dawkins gets back Sunday, is he starting without any practice?
I think that's crazy.
I don't know. Especially in a road environment, you haven't taken any reps with the install of the game plan.
And like I said, I always keep saying it, not only these guys, it's not like these guys are like got a twisted ankle where they're in the building, going to meetings, talking and watching practice firsthand.
Mental reps.
They're at home. They're out of the building.
I mean, they could do meetings virtually on Zoom, but besides that... Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, I'm.
Everybody's doing it, I guess, to some degree. The Patriots have four or five players on COVID reserve. Most of them are backup players. Kendrick Bourne is one of the only notable starters, per se, that is on their COVID reserve list. So, they would seem to have. The COVID reserve list for the Patriots would seem to be less impactful on their product on the field than, say, the Bills. So we'll just have to wait and see where it sits come the end of the week, and then we'll be able to better ascertain who has less to work with than the other in this all-important matchup, which is what we are asking you about in terms of a regular season game for the Bills that you can remember that carried the magnitude and importance of Sunday's game against the Patriots. We've got Mark in West Seneca waiting patiently for us, so we'll go to Mark now. Mark, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, to you too.
Oh, thank you. I guess my mind blurs when you start talking about regular season games. I had seasons from the day the stadium opened all the way through to the 2000s, and I remember being in that stadium when we had 18,000 season tickets and there was 19,000 people in the stands. Mm, so my mind always goes to, it's all about winning the Super Bowl, and I still remember standing, and I know you're not talking playoffs, standing in a stadium next to my buddies who have been going there for 25 years now, and looking at each other going, oh, my God, we're in the Super Bowl at the end of the 51-3 game against the Raiders. To this day, it was such an unbelievable feeling. It was a mountain we never thought we would ever climb, certainly not one we would ever see in our lifetimes. And then in a blink of an eye in 3 hours, we were there. And it was absolutely amazing, I mean, to be a Bills fan at that moment. So that's the one that just always comes to my mind as far as big games, important games, and then we finally had success.
Yeah, there was a little bit about that still I think even current fans can relate to, even young fans who went through the drought. It was the drought, you know, that kind of steeled them against it. But you go back to 1984, 1985, and 1986. 1984 and 1985, the team was 2-14 in back-to-back years. And – you know, 85 is when they drafted Bruce Smith first overall. And Then in 86, they signed Jim Kelly just before 86 started. They went 1-8 under Hank Bull, and then they got Marv. So you did – that was a dark day. And I remember hearing stories about the fan – there were like 16,000 people in the stands for a game. It was empty.
Yeah, which is hard to fathom nowadays.
Right. Right.
Even during the drought, there were fans in the stands. It was large. It was full most of the time.
Even when the team wasn't in contention, just sprinkling of no shows, and so, yeah, and that moment I heard it back then, of obviously loud and clear from all the fans that had lived through that, and yeah. The players too. I mean, I was there. I got in here with Daryl Talley, who was drafted in 83, yeah. And went through that. Yeah, him and Jim were drafted the same year. Think about the trek he was on to get to 88, where we were 12-4, and then go backwards, and then, you know, 90. It was 8 years into his career, 9 years into his career. He finally gets to the Super Bowl. Yeah, it was quite a moment for all of the guys in the locker room and the players or the fans who had been suffering through that. Yeah. 0 for the 80s against the Dolphins. I mean, it's a lot like the drought years.
Or 0 for the 70s.
0 for the 70s against the Dolphins, yeah. Yes. And then it was a little bit like the drought years. You know, you just couldn't get over the hump.
Speaking of players in that locker room, we're going to bring one of those players on right now. His name is Thurman Thomas. Maybe you've heard of him. He's an NFL Hall of Famer. We're going to get him on now because we understand that Dane Jackson has been a little delayed at the close of practice here. So we'll get Dane on a little bit later. And in the meantime, we will bring on Thurman, who was scheduled to join us here in the second hour. He was kind enough to adjust his schedule to accommodate Dane Jackson, but now we have to flip-flop those guys. And so the Hall of Famer will be joining us here. And we understand that he was a little hot about some of the Pro Bowl snubs last night for the Bills as well. For those of you that don't know, the Pro Bowl teams were announced last night on NFL Network, 8 p.m., and the Bills had two players make the team outright, Deion Dawkins and... who was our other Pro Bowler?
Steph Diggs.
Stephon Diggs. So Diggs and Dawkins make the Pro Bowl. The Bills have a host of players who are alternates. Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds are first alternates, then a slew of other players, second, third, fourth, and fifth alternates. And I know that Thurman was not all that happy that Jordan Poyer, to this day, still has not gotten a Pro Bowl nod. He has been enormously productive the last 4 years, actually all 5 years that he's been here. His numbers this year, he's second in the league in interceptions with 5. He's tied with a bunch of guys, but he's second in the league, or definitely in the AFC. So, yeah, I mean, he puts up big numbers again, is enormously productive on a team that's widely seen as an AFC contender, and he still can't get a nod there. Tyrann Mathieu was a safety that made the Pro Bowl for the AFC. So Thurm, what do you think about Pro Bowl and some of the guys that got left off the list for the Bills? You were pretty hot about the Jordan Poyer snub.
Yeah, I am pretty hot about that. I think when you look at the overall, the Bills, there's been two guys that have been steady throughout this, and that's been Michael Hyde and Jordan Poyer. And ever since those guys have gotten here, they have been the leader of this team and really in the secondary, and they showed their leadership over the past couple of years. I don't know what else they can do. They're very talented. They don't make a lot of mistakes, and they're just two guys who are just not getting the credit that they deserve right now. And I tell you, there's a couple other guys on Josh Allen, too, who probably are going to be pissed off coming this game Sunday against the Patriots.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. It's always a big disappointment. There are guys who maybe had the best year they've had in a handful of years, like Jordan Poyer, who
right.
It's hard to get over that hump. And it's you see guys that go to the Pro Bowl, and you know, it's hard for guys who don't play directly against them to understand how good a year they've had. And the steady nature of the way they've played has been, I think, the biggest thing. Him and Hyde, you know, the two of them together have just been such a productive tandem. I don't know, man. And the thing that gets me, Thurm, is you can say what you want. It's a small town like Buffalo and all of this stuff. The thing that gets me is they're on prime time a lot. They got some games. People are getting exposed to these guys now. It's not like they play at 1 o'clock on Sunday in Buffalo every week.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You're exactly right, Steve. These guys have been on primetime game, and I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I think 4 weeks in a row they were on primetime. Right. You know, I mean, with Kansas City and Tennessee and a couple of games after that. So, yeah, I know you're sitting there and you're thinking that, oh, yeah, it's a small market, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But these guys have been in some, primetime games. But I think when you look at the overall picture, this team overall, I mean, they haven't beat a team with a winning record since week five against Kansas City, and they were 2-2.
Right.
And I don't think that has anything to do with it, but I just think that this game is so important to now all of a sudden the guys who didn't make the Pro Bowl, but just the overall organization and where they're going to go. And because we were just in this situation last year where we swept the Patriots. And all of a sudden, 1 year, you know, we could get swept by them. Yeah. The playoffs have started for the Buffalo Bills, and it starts Sunday. I wasn't even worried about the Carolina game. I thought they should have they could have easily put 40 points on them, got up to a little slow start. But, you know, this is the game of the year. I think Josh Allen, somebody might have said, you know, our playoffs begin now. And they really do. If they can win out, where does that put them? I think that puts them in a better situation than winning two out of the last three.
Yeah, no question about that. And, you know, Steve and I were talking about this game specifically, Thurm, and I think the Colts provided a little bit of a blueprint jumping up on them early. You know, they get the two early touchdowns, then they get the takeaway. Before you know it, it's 20-0, and now the Patriots cannot play the way they want, which is run the football, play solid defense, force field goals in the red zone. They have to put more of the game on Mac Jones. The problem is Buffalo's had trouble putting points on the board in the first quarter. Three of the last five games, they have not scored points in the first quarter, and it's put the pressure on the Bills' defense to kind of hold them in early. How do they change that course so they can get some points on the Patriots early?
Oh, man, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing of the game, picture of the game. The Bills have to score early. I mean, I'm talking like first drive, and I'm not talking a field goal. A field goal would be nice, but I'm talking a touchdown because I think you've seen over the past couple of weeks, as great as or good as Mac Jones has been for the Patriots, I mean – they haven't really played any tough opponents also. And I think, like you said, with Frank Wright and what they did to them last year, got up on them early. And I just don't see Mac Jones beating you throwing the ball 40 or 50 times. I just don't see it that way. And that's kind of the blueprint that Frank Wright put out there with the Colts. And obviously our team isn't built like the Colts, but I tell you what, their defense got after those guys. And I don't think they were in like, what, 7 or 8 man box all the time, the Colts. So, I mean, they were kind of pretty much playing them kind of straight up. Obviously, when New England put two tight ends and a fullback in, the defense changes. But, hey, the Bills got to come out on fire, man. And I know they're missing Cole Beasley. But you know what? I think back over the course of the year, there were times where Cole Beasley wasn't a valuable asset for the Buffalo Bills offense. Won a couple of games, didn't even have a couple of catches. So I just think that this team is going to be ready. I feel real good about Josh Allen and the offense and their performance that they're going to give. I don't know what the weather's going to be like, but I feel real good about this game. I think they're ready to make their stance here in the AFC that not just yet, New England. I know it's only been a year, but this is our division.
Yeah, well, one of the things about going out and getting off to a fast start is that the Patriots are built to lean on their defense and their run game. Their defense has played extremely well. You can move the football on them, but it's hard to score on those guys. If you can start scoring on them, that's the big difference, because they don't care if you've got the ball and they've got the lead. They know they're really tough to score on. You know what I mean? So we saw that in that first matchup, and we've seen it in other matchups as well. If you're going to go out there and you can score points, like the Colts were able to do, go up 20 points on them, yeah, sure. And we were laughing that, hey, if it's part of the game plan to get up by 20 points, yeah, you're going to win the game. But
easier said than done.
Right, but the strength of the reason it's so difficult to do that is because the Patriots team is built to hold you down offensively. Their defense is really, really executing at a high level. So that's why it's so hard to get out to a fast start on this particular team.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's going to take a collective group of all three, offense, defense, and special teams, to win this football game. I really do believe that. I do believe if you give Josh Allen enough time, and I know this Patriots are going to have some type of scheme for him where, you know, they might keep him in the pocket and not let him get outside. But I tell you what, if this offensive line can stay together and give him a couple of few seconds, more seconds, to let these wide receivers, you know, kind of extend their route just a little bit, I think that causes a problem because we haven't seen that really all year long. I know Steph is having a great year, not the year that he had last year, but I don't know what the numbers are like. But, you know, I think his targets might be down. His catches might be down at this point. But, that defense for New England is pretty solid. And if you look back at Bill Belichick's career, that's pretty much what it's been. You know, he's been a guy that could really change the outcome of a football game just by the defense playing well. And like New England always does, you know, they capitalize on your mistakes. And if the Bills don't make any mistakes, it's going to be hard to beat them.
Right.
Thurm, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the developments we saw in the running game last week. Devin Singletary, pretty much the only guy wire to wire carrying the football for the Bills last week. And I realize they were going against the 20th ranked run defense in Carolina last week, not the one they're going to be facing this week in New England.
Right.
But I'm wondering if Devin Singletary is now seen by the offensive coaching staff as the primary ball carrier, no matter what the game plan might be. The reason I say that is because of what Sean McDermott said this week when he described Singletary and said he always seems to be falling forward. And you look at his 22 carries last week, Thurm, he only had one carry where he got no gain and another carry for minus 1 yard. Everything else was in the positive territory. Granted, there were a lot of twos and threes and some ones.
Right.
But there were no negative carries. And I feel like the offensive staff, Thurm, is at a point where they say, well, at least this guy helps us stay on schedule on offense, which is, you know, that's not exactly a high bar to set, but that's where their run game is right now, and he seems like the best option for that.
Yeah, he is. I know we've been saying in the last couple of weeks, you know, where is Zach Moss? And obviously, if you look at what has happened to him in the last couple of games being inactive, you know, Devin Singletary has been out there pretty much most of not all the game. And I think they're doing some different things where they don't allow him to have to pick up blitzes all the time because he's not a big guy. But obviously that could change going against a defensive scheme like Belichick and keeping him in the backfield and not letting him get out in pass pattern. So, no, he has been, you know what, he's been pretty much solid all year long at the time that he does, you know, touch the football, whether it's running the football or catching a swing pass or trying to catch a screen. So he's earned this. If you really look at it, he's been solid all year. And now, even though having a game like that against Carolina, maybe it does give the offensive line and Brian Daboll a little bit more confidence to call his number. Because, like you said, he is falling forward. He's not falling back. And like you said, 2 or 3 yards is here. But you know what? I think that does keep a lot of pressure off of Josh Allen.
Thurm, thanks, man. It's good seeing you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
All right. Merry Christmas to you and your lovely family. God bless you. Go
Take
Bills.
Care.
All right. Thanks, Thurm. Merry Christmas to you. That's Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Famer, joining us here, as he does every Thursday. We have to take a break here, but be back with Dane Jackson in a second here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and it is time for us to be joined by Bills cornerback Dane Jackson. He is our fresh off-the-field interview brought to you by Austin Air, the official clean air provider of the Buffalo Bills. Dane, I got to imagine you are expecting a much different type of game when you play the Patriots on Sunday compared to that first one. You almost didn't even have to worry about covering anybody in the defensive backfield. It's going to be completely different this time around, isn't it?
Sir, yes, sir. I mean, you never know. I mean, we watch a lot of film, you know, try to get tips and reminders, but, you know, you never know how they're going to approach the game. So we're really just be ready for anything.
Yeah, and it was a strange game the last time, 35-40 mile an hour winds. You knew it was going to be one of those weird kind of games when they did decide to throw it at all, if they did, and it was only a handful. How does this affect your ability to get ready for these guys, knowing that you haven't even seen them, their passing attack, or what they even thought about your defensive backfield last time?
We just watch a lot of film, you know, from early on in the season or when they do get into passing situations, and, you know, just break it down and evaluate those guys in that way. You know, like I said, the last game we played, it was a lot of runs, but, you know, you never know what you're going to get this game with the conditions not being the same as they were up here. So, you know, we just have to be ready for anything.
And then, Dane, I don't know if you've heard it in recent weeks, but when some of your secondary teammates have been asked about you, you know, moving into the lineup, the first thing out of their mouths is, we trust Dane. And, you know, as much as you put pressure on yourself to perform, how reassuring, how much peace of mind does it give you when you hear guys like Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde and Levi say, we trust Dane out there?
As a young guy, it gives you, I feel like, first and foremost, it gives you a lot of confidence, because those guys, they've been playing together for 4 or 5 years now. So just to, like, have them have me come in and, you know, have full trust in me, have full faith in me, and have confidence in me, that gives me the confidence to go out there and perform with those guys.
And you know that coming into this, you've got how much different do you feel after just a couple of weeks? I know you've got to feel more comfortable back there than you did maybe the first time you lined up as a Bill when, you know, in game one this year. How much has changed over the last 3 weeks for you personally with all the reps you've gotten?
I just feel more comfortable out there. You know, as the games go on, as the reps get, as the reps increase, I just feel more comfortable. Even in practice today, like, when certain stuff happens and you just, like, play off each other without that being the agenda, you know, that's just the feeling that I'm getting with more reps that I've been getting.
Talking with Bills cornerback Dane Jackson. And, Dane, the fans obviously are going into this game, they're biting their fingernails. You know, they get nervous because, you know, it's a big game. There's a lot on the line. You guys obviously can't think that way. You've got to focus on the task at hand. Are there big games from your college career at Pitt that you can kind of use as experience for pressure-packed, big magnitude-type games like the one you're walking into on Sunday to kind of keep a level head and just focus on your assignments each and every down?
I can't really think of a game, because, like, me personally, I know this is said a lot, but I honestly really approach, like, every game the same, because I try not to get too worried about, you know, all the outside noise or what more we have to do or anything like that, because I'm a simple guy. So I like to just keep it simple and keep my same routine. That helps me, you know, perform at the best of my ability.
Give us a lowdown on the wide receivers for the Patriots. What do you see in those guys?
They have a lot of talent over there. They have Nikhil Harry, 16. They have guys who are bigger guys who, you know, they like to be physical. They have guys who are smaller guys who can work inside and work outside as well. So they have a really good collective receiver group.
I'm sure, Dane, you've watched a lot of the tape from their game last week against the Colts. I know you pride yourself on being a physical corner. What did you think of the physical way that Colts defense approached that game? I mean, they were knocking the snot out of those guys last week. What was your impression of that defensive approach by the Colts last week?
I mean, I feel like they did a good job. You know, they understood the assignment. They understood what was needed to be done to win that game. You know, it's always a physical matchup when you play these guys. So, you know, they came ready. They came with their hard hat.
Well, listen, Dane, we wish you the best of luck up there on Sunday. Obviously, have a Merry Christmas first, and we hope you get a little time with your family. I know Saturday's a travel day, so it's going to be tough, but we hope you have a little bit of time to enjoy the holiday with your family, and good luck showing out on Sunday.
Sir, thank you. I appreciate you, guys.
All Thanks, right, Dane. That's Dane Jackson, Bills cornerback, who's going to be on that field in Foxborough coming up here on Sunday. Big game, as we know, for the Bills, as the division title will be on the line. Yeah, and I knew he was going to tell me that, you know, he tries to keep every game the same, keep it simple, stupid is his approach, you know, the KISS philosophy, if you will. I was just wondering how he gets to that place to just kind of keep it simple in his head. You know, he says, I try to keep the outside noise away. I'm always curious, what are the techniques, whether they're mental or whether it's physical, to kind of keep that stuff on the periphery where it doesn't cloud your vision and your focus for the game.
Yeah, you stay.
Because all guys do it differently, right?
Yeah. You just got to make sure you stay in the moment, particularly on the field. You can't really think about all the ramifications and the ifs, ands, or whats. You just got to think about, okay, this is a setup here. Here's the guy I've got right here. Let's go. And just focus in that moment and not even worry, too, either about, you know, you just got to play the technique of the defense. And the same thing on offense. Just don't worry about what the quarterback's doing, what the offensive line are doing, if the quarterback's going to get sacked or any of that. You do your part and expect everybody else to do theirs as well. And that's what you can focus on. And then when the play's over, you look around, see how did everybody else do, you know, kind of thing. And that's the way I did it. And sometimes it's hard because you know how difficult a time some part, you know, some other guys maybe have in the offensive line struggling today. I don't know if Josh is going to be able to, you know, hang in there in the pocket. When I turn around in this route, I don't know where Josh is going to be maybe. You get started getting distracted by that instead of just running the route you're supposed to be running, and sometimes that gets you into trouble.
We want to get to the tweet sheet to get your thoughts on a regular season game that lived up to the importance of this Sunday's game against the Patriots, which, as we've said, will essentially determine the division title, at least as far as the Patriots and Bills are concerned. Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And Buddy says, seems likely, but maybe not if the emotional toll on the fan base is considered. The Bills were supposed to take over the AFC East after being New England's doormat for 20 years. If New England wins the division this year after we finally found a quarterback, paying him $250 million, it will suck. It's huge! Exclamation point.
Yeah. Here's the thing, too. I mean, just because you paid Josh all that money and because he's the best guy we've had here in decades and is better than almost every single one of the other guys around the league, it doesn't mean you deserve to win every game you're going to play or every division title every year. There's a lot that goes into it. And you got to get input from all the guys. And the simple fact of the matter is the Bills have been left hanging by injuries, COVID, nagging injuries, particularly up front on both sides of the ball. And they've struggled to win the line of scrimmage. And, you know, we saw it early in the – even in the Carolina game, a game they won comfortably. Josh was running around like crazy early in that game until the offensive line settled down. So you may have that guy, and he may be great, but that doesn't mean that you deserve to win any of these games because you need all 53 guys showing up on game day to win games. That's – what the Patriots have done, that's why we couldn't beat them for so long, because we'd have a handful of guys playing well, and they'd have more than that playing well. You got to play well, and you can't make mistakes against them. But, and I get it, you know, we're in a place now where you've got a chance to win it, and that's basically all we ever kind of wanted. Yeah. And it felt like, in retrospect, we really never did, because we didn't have that guy. Well, now we do, and we're going to have a shot at it, and we'll see if we can make it work.
Jack on the tweet sheet says, last year's Denver game was huge. Denver wasn't as good as the Pats are, but the Bills still had to travel there a day early and win to get the division, and they did it. This year, we're fighting for our division lives. Dear Santa, please deliver us a W in Foxborough on Sunday. It'll be a day after Christmas, but I'm sure people wouldn't mind it coming a day after.
Yeah.
Mark on the tweet sheet says, 1964 versus Boston and Fenway for the East crown. Do or die, Bills won. So that's the second time we heard about that AFL East title.
Yep.
from an old-time fan, for sure. JT says, no, this is the biggest game for us to regain the AFC East title. This will be huge. then win out the next two and have home field advantage for at least a game, maybe two, in the playoffs. To top it off, Miami beats the Pats at the end of the season and no playoffs for Billy. Ha!
Yeah, well, you can conjure up all kinds of perfect scenarios, but
yeah,
we all know it rarely happens perfectly.
Right. The one we definitely don't want is New England winning and Miami losing on Sunday, because that would mean the Patriots win the title. They clinch the AFC East with that scenario. Right. Yuck.
Yeah.
Amos on the tweet sheet says, it was a while ago, but that Steelers game in which we played their backups and lost, that was 2004. We had a caller that mentioned that game. Imagine winning that and going to the playoffs. May have been able to put a dent into the playoff drought. It would have. Would have been in 2004, absolutely. And then your playoff drought would have only been 13 years instead of 17.
Well, it would have been, could have been, might have been.
Still would have been long, might have been but not as long.
It might have been even less than that. They might have, that might have, you know, pinwheeled them into more success.
Oh,
you never know.
I hadn't thought of that. Pinwheeled them into success. I like that phrase.
It's, things have effect on the future we don't know about. And there's no way, you know, to go back and say all this or that, or if this had happened, then that would have happened. It's not quite accurate. And that's why I'm not really getting too all, you know, wrapped up in this game. This is not a season killer, but man, oh man, if you win this, it makes a statement about how good your team really is. The Patriots are favored in this game, and they should be. I mean, they already beat the Bills. They didn't have to throw football once to beat the Bills. They beat it through it three times to beat the Bills 3 weeks ago. They're doing it with a rookie quarterback. He's going to end this season with the highest completion percentage of any rookie quarterback in NFL history. They've got a stout defense that is everything is predicated upon. So if Bills offense with a makeshift offensive line can score points on the Patriot defense, yeah, you deserve all the accolades and expectations you were garnered with in the beginning of the season, because you'll have a chance to fulfill them.
Patriots defense, number one in points allowed, as we know. Maybe the most interesting number of their defensive statistics, 24th in the league against the run, 26th in the league in yards per carry average against. There have been teams that have run successfully on them, the two most notable being the Titans and the Colts. They're good running teams, and they've ballooned that average up for the Patriots. But if you're 26th after 14 games played, that means a good number of teams have had success on you, not just two, right?
Yeah, but I think the reason they're doing, you know, they're so good is because they may have a good year, good games, but they don't have games like the Colts and the Tennessee Titans did. They may run for 135 yards.
And not get any points.
And not get any rushing touchdowns, you know, so that's where we're at.
We have to take a break here. When Steve and I come back, we will wrap things up with a thought about Buffalo's slot receiver position. Who could be lining up there, knowing Cole Beasley won't, being on the COVID reserve list? We'll talk about that next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, Steve. Bills slot receiver position. You remember all the way back in the preseason, when Cole Beasley was held out of, you know, some early preseason games, Isaiah McKenzie was the guy used in the slot. And at the preseason game against Chicago, he and Mitchell Trubisky were lighting up the Bears' defense. He was productive in that slot role. Do you think he is the first option there in the slot with Cole Beasley not playing on Sunday? Or if Emmanuel Sanders is healthy, could he move into the slot where he does have experience and Gabe Davis is the number two outside opposite Diggs?
It's a good question. I would think probably Emmanuel Sanders would go in there and Gabe Davis would come in. That's been the way they've rotated so far.
That we just haven't seen Sanders in the slot tremendously much this year.
But that doesn't mean that they may switch that up in a myriad of different ways. I mean, there's no way that Isaiah McKenzie's not going to take any reps at wideout, and how they use him with that, you know, the bubble screens or the whip or the end around, the jet sweeps, that kind of thing. I'm sure Isaiah McKenzie's going to be in the game plan, particularly with Cole Beasley on the sidelines. They got to use everybody to beat this team.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the more interesting
player
personnel deployments in Sunday's game. Who plays that role in his place? That's it for us today, but Steve and I will be back tomorrow with a gigantic Friday show on Christmas Eve, which includes NFL Films' Greg Cosell to break down the X's and O's of this one. We'll see you tomorrow at 1:00.